There we go. All right. Thanks, Tony. That drum thing actually made me feel quite at home. Out in Tanzania, you know, nobody ever uses like the pre-programmed songs and stuff on keyboards and everything, except for out in Africa. When those keyboards get out to Africa, I mean the drum beats, the pre-programmed songs. We had a Bible school graduation one time, and Jingle Bell starts playing as the people are coming down, as the graduates are walking down the aisle, and everyone's like, "This is a great song. I wonder what the lyrics really are." I mean, they don't know like Jingle Bells or anything, so it was great. So we're all. We had a few guests with us, and they're kind of looking at us like, "What in the world?" Don't worry about it, guys. It's just a song. It's just music. So another time, we had the Star Wars theme song came on. You know, the graduates start walking down, dun 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 dun. Dun. It's pretty awesome. Well, I should probably get to my sermon. As some of you know, I bought a motorcycle a little while ago. Which I love. I really enjoy my motorcycle. And it was great because Bethany and I, we were having a real hard time working with the one car thing because she works full time. And then if somebody's in the hospital and I don't have a way to get there, it's kind of like they call me, "I'm in the hospital, can you come see me?" "Well, I can come see you tomorrow. I'll drop Bethany off at work, I'll come back, I'll get you." But you know, I was really looking forward to getting this motorcycle. I'll admit it. I mean, I was working with Derek, you know, saving my pennies, you know, slave labor, just kind of whittling away at it a little bit at a time. And then I got my motorcycle, and I was like, you know, yes, this is awesome. I'm so excited. And you know how before you get something, so oftentimes before you get something, you're thinking, "God, if I just get that, I will never ask you for anything again." You know, have any of you guys ever felt that way? "God, if I just, you know, man, if I just get that, or if I just do this, I'll be content for the rest of my life. I'm never going to, you know, long for anything." I kind of felt that way before I got married, actually, to Bethany. You know, you're going up towards marriage, it's kind of like, yeah, here we go. I'm going to get married. I'm never going to have another problem. Everything's going to be solved. My deepest desires will all be met. And I got married, and it's been great. It's been awesome. It has been. No, it has been awesome. But okay, so back to my motorcycle. Let's leave that one alone. All right. But after I got my motorcycle, I'm riding it around, and I'm like, yeah, this is great. This is awesome. And then somebody pulls up next to me on another nicer motorcycle, and I kind of look over at that like, man. This was as I'm driving it back from the dealership, okay? Mind you, as I'm driving it back from the dealership, pull up to a stoplight, you know, where they got the double lanes down there downtown, and another guy pulls up on one. It's just this beautiful sports bike. It's just sleek and gorgeous, and I looked over at it and was like, "God, if I just get one of those, I will never ask you for..." But how many times in life do we, you know, we feel like, "Oh, if I just get this, or if I just achieve that, or if I just experience this," whatever it might be. It might be marriage, it might be a motorcycle, it might be a boat, it might be all sorts of things. It might be a trip. "I just want to go to Europe," or "I just want to win the championship," or whatever it might be. There's this experience out ahead of us that we say, "If I just get that, I'll be set. I'll be good," right? How many times has that happened to us in our life? If I can just have children, I will be happy for the rest of my life. And then you have them. Or if I just, you know, Bethany and I almost bought a puppy yesterday. We were this close. And we were like, oh. We drove by Petco or whatever it is down there, and they had adoption day, and we went down there, and they had these little puppies, and they were just so cute. And Bethany and I were both like, and they were driving onto the beach, and I asked Bethany, "So what are you thinking?" She goes, "Those puppies were so cute." Just like outburst. But But, you know, and then you start thinking about, well, I know if I get a puppy, all this other stuff will come on. But I love dogs. Anyway, back to my sermon. We're going through Ecclesiastes. We're talking about in Ecclesiastes. This is kind of an apologetics book. Solomon is looking at life from the perspective of if there is no God. If we just look at life as man from his birth to his death, what kind of a purpose, what kind of meaning can we find in life? And Solomon actually, he does several experiments throughout the book. This is kind of Solomon, at first, he started out really great. You know, everybody, his father set him up for success. He was just like pruned into success, all this stuff. But he kind of went off course at the end. Some scholars believe that he went off course and then he comes back later on. And after he came back from his rebellious state, or whatever you want to call it, he writes Ecclesiastes. And he talks about all of his experiences, all the things that he tried. He tried to find meaning. He tried to find purpose. He tried, but he couldn't do it. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, he starts off and he's talking. He talks about pleasure. He's going to start off now with pleasure. I'll start just in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king in Jerusalem, king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. All right, well, that's cheery. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. So this is kind of his introduction here. What is crooked cannot be straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were in Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceive that this also is a striving after the wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases in knowledge increases sorrow. All right. Next week or the following week, we'll come back and we'll actually look at wisdom and we'll talk about what he says about wisdom, which is this Ecclesiastes was written to talk about the mysteries of life, how not everything is just black and white like we see in the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs it says, you know, if you do this, this will happen. If you do good, good will come. And that's kind of the perspective that a lot of even Job's friends, we heard about Job's friends this morning in Sunday school. That's the perspective that they had. And yet, when we look at life up close, in general, those principles hold true. In general, if you live wisely, your life will be better. But every once in a while, you come across somebody they've been living wisely, they've been doing good, and it doesn't come back the same way it doesn't come back to them the same way. You come across people who they've poured out their whole life. They've lived these unselfish lives, and then they just keep having one catastrophe after another coming back to them. And it doesn't really make sense. And Ecclesiastes and the book of Job kind of struggle with that. They struggle with trying to figure out why. Why, if someone is living wisely, why does it not always work out for them? Why don't you always grow richer if you're a good steward of your wealth? Why don't you always reap benefits when you sow? And under the sun, life really doesn't make sense. It doesn't, because, you know, bad people get away with bad stuff. And good people, even though they do good things, sometimes get punished for it. Sometimes get persecuted for it. And under the sun, it's like, man, this makes absolutely no sense. We'll get to that another time. But first, the first thing that Solomon decides to try out is pleasure or enjoyment or experience. Chapter 2, verse 1 says this. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this was vanity. All right. Before he even goes into his whole experience, he says, and what I found out was it's vanity, which last week we said that vanity the literal word in the Hebrew is a breath or a vapor. It's here today, gone tomorrow. It's vain. It you know, how many of you guys remember the breath that you took on July 4th of last year? Right? You took so many of them that day, you don't remember them. You don't remember. How many of you guys remember an individual breath from your life? We don't really even think about it. We've just been breathing, not really thinking about it. And Solomon is saying that under the sun, that means if you take God out of the picture, even all of the pleasure you could experience in this world is a breath and it's gone. It's pointless. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? All right. Now, in other places, the Proverbs and stuff, they talk about laughter being good for the heart. Laughter is a medicine for your body. And you know, Jesus laughed. Others laughed. And laughter is, it's a God-given thing. It's a good thing. But what's the point of it if, you know, this is all there is? You're just closing your eyes to the inevitable. I searched with all my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what is good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. All right, so he turns to alcohol, tries that out. He says, well, you know, some people, they find great meaning in this. I'm going to try this. So he turns to alcohol, tries to cheer his heart with alcohol. And again, he says, this is pointless. What am I doing? I'm just drowning out the pain that I have inside of me. I'm just drowning out the meaninglessness. When the alcohol wears off, I sober up and everything is still meaningless. It's pointless. Verse 4, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. Okay, he's talking about all of his accomplishments, everything that he's done. Parks and all this stuff, these were considered luxury items back in the day. Okay, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were one of the seven wonders of the world. And if you look in 1 Kings, I believe it's in chapter 7, you can read about all of these building projects that Solomon did. He did a lot of stuff, tons of things. He built all of these things trying to find some meaning. Maybe if I build myself a garden and I just relax in that garden, I'll have peace. I'll have some sort of spiritual connection to the world. I don't know. I got to find something. And then now he talks about his riches. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. Okay, this is from a different time. All right. And so he's trying everything he can. Slaves were a sign of great wealth back in those days. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been in Jerusalem before me. All right. I owned livestock. This was money back in the day. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of man. All right. He's trying every single thing. He's trying wealth. He's trying alcohol. He's trying women. Okay? If you look, and in fact, let's go over to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 11. Says this, now Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. But Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. All right, so Solomon, he said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find satisfaction, whatever it takes. You know, if I need one marriage, cool. If I need 700 marriages, cool. If I need 300 women on top of that, cool. I'm going to find pleasure in this life. I'm going to find fulfillment in this life. And, you know, a lot of maybe we don't go to quite that extreme today, but a lot of American society says sex and love is the only way to find fulfillment in life. And a lot of that has to do with having a secular perspective, a perspective that says this world is all there is, eventually the sun will burn out, the world will be destroyed. The only meaningful thing that we can find is love. It's a relationship. And because of that, we end up actually smothering the people that we're trying to be in a relationship with. Because that person becomes everything. That person becomes all of your meaning in life. And a person can never live up to that ideal. It's impossible. And yet, that's the only meaning that some people can find. And it crushes them. And why do you think everybody's having such a hard time picking out a spouse? Because you have to find the perfect person. If that person is not perfect, man alive, you're in trouble. Because you only get one shot at this. You only get one life. And once that life is over, you've missed your chance at any meaning in life at all. Wow, you're talking about putting pressure on dating. Man, you can't even get to know each other over a pizza. So, this is verse 9 of chapter 2, again. So I became great and surpassed all who were in Jerusalem before me. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all of my toil. So he's saying, yeah, I got some fulfillment out of it. Some brief fulfillment. I felt fulfilled for a little bit. But then he considers. Verse 11, he says this. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. All of this, all of his output, yes, there was a return for it, but it was minuscule in compared to how much he put out. He was, you know, building, buying, marrying, all of it, the return on it was minuscule compared to what he was putting out. Now, there's an interesting, there's a cool thing here. I'm gonna talk a little bit about this. Well, I'm gonna talk a lot about this. In verse 5, he talks about, I made gardens for myself. Okay? Verse 4 and 5, I'll read. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. Now, a lot of scholars and a lot of the commentaries I read, they said there's a close parallel here between Genesis chapter 1 and Ecclesiastes chapter 2. What's going on? He's trying to recreate Eden. He's trying to recreate paradise. In fact, the word for garden is the same word for paradise. It's the exact same word. So literally he says, I built paradise. I built paradise on earth. And at the end of it, it was still vanity. I built gardens. I built all of this stuff. I built paradise on earth. And fundamentally, that is what man is trying to do in his brief life. If you talk to anybody, what are you looking for? Fundamentally, they're looking for paradise. They're trying to build paradise. They're trying to rebuild paradise. It might look different for all of us. We might have different values of what we think paradise will look like. In fact, oftentimes, generationally, paradise will look different for each generation, okay? So you've got one generation says, all right, money and accomplishments, that will bring me paradise. The next generation saw that the former generation was not actually satisfied with money and accomplishments. So they say paradise must be somewhere else. Paradise must be in having nothing. So then you got people who go to the opposite extreme, okay? And they say, I don't want to own anything. I want to do organic farm. I want to do whatever. But they rebel against the norm of the last generation. Because, you know, they come to the end of it and they say, man, my parents didn't find paradise. Paradise is somewhere else. I got to find paradise somewhere else. And that is the the deep heart striving of every one of us is we're looking for paradise. Whatever it has to be. Whether it's a spouse, whether it's money, whether it's accomplishments, success, whether it's alcohol, drugs, we're looking for something that will bring us back to paradise. Because we know, I am here and I'm not in paradise. I have to get there because that will be paradise. And usually we get there and we find out, there's something missing. My paradise is incomplete. But each one of us says, I have to build paradise. I need to build paradise. And what there's an interesting thing, though. In the Old Testament, if you can read it, okay, if you can handle it, it's one of the hardest parts of the Bible to read, is talking about the instructions for building the temple. Okay? It's hard. I'll admit it. Okay? I have read through it, and many times I read like five verses, and then I'm thinking about my motorcycle or something else. Okay? My mind just wanders off. It's not easy stuff to read. Okay? But if you read it closely and you pay attention, you'll see that throughout the tabernacle and throughout the temple, there are all these images or pictures throughout the temple of vines, of leaves, of fruit. And what is that? That's God's way of saying, only when your relationship with me is restored can you get back to Eden. The temple and the tabernacle reflected Eden. Everything from the lampstands to the table to the bowls to the pillars inside, it was carved everywhere. It was just like every intricate detail to the tassels hanging from the priest's garments looked like pomegranates. And so all of it is God saying, only in relationship to me can you get back to Eden. Only when you have a right relationship with me can this paradise be restored. That's the only way it can be restored. And he's trying to say it in every way that he can, even going so far as to depict his tabernacle and his temple as Eden, as paradise. Now, most of us, because it's so far away, we can't even picture that. We can't even think of that. But there is a story, an awesome story. You talk about looking for paradise. There's a really cool story in Luke chapter 23. Okay? And when this just blew my mind, when I was thinking about paradise, okay, and I'm thinking, man, what does God say about paradise? And you have this, the crucifixion of Jesus, okay? At the crucifixion of Jesus, there's a criminal hung on his left and a criminal hung on his right. And the one criminal mocks him and makes fun of him, and the other criminal says, I deserve what I'm getting right now. Now, let's think about this criminal for a moment, okay? He has probably, throughout his life, been trying to build paradise. Throughout his life, he's done things that, you know, probably were a little bit underhanded. At least a little bit underhanded. It's possible that he was a rebel against the Roman Empire, and he was being punished for leading a rebellion, for fighting in a rebellion. It's possible, Barabbas, it's quite clear that he was a revolutionary. He was fighting against the Roman Empire to try and establish a Jewish state. Because they said, if we get rid of the Romans, we'll have our freedom back. We'll be able to restore our Jewish customs to the way they were. We'll have independence. It will be paradise. So this criminal on the cross has dedicated his life to fighting, possibly fighting for paradise, possibly stealing, cheating, whatever it takes to get there. To get from here to there. And where has it gotten him? All of his striving, all of his fighting, all of his stealing, all of his cheating has gotten him put up on a cross. He's hanging there naked on a cross with absolutely nothing. The splinters in his back, the nails in his hands and feet, he has nothing. All of his striving has led to absolutely nothing. And then there's this really awesome passage here. Verse 39 says this. Luke chapter 23, 39. One of the criminals who hanged railed at him. Okay, so this is the criminal who's accusing Jesus. He's saying, are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us. This guy is still looking for paradise off of the cross. He's saying, get me out of here. Get me off of this thing, okay? I gotta start my life again. If you're really the Christ, you can get me out of this situation. But the other rebuked him, saying, do you not fear God? Since you are under the same sentence of condemnation, who are you to... You don't realize what you've done to get up on this cross? You and I, we deserve this. Maybe they knew each other. Maybe they were fellow revolutionaries. And we indeed, justly, we deserve this. For we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. And he said to Jesus, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said to him, truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. Wow. So a man hanging on a cross has absolutely nothing. He's stripped literally naked. He's stripped literally naked, hanging on a cross next to Jesus. Nothing. This man is despised and rejected by the world. He has no chance of success, no chance of finding happiness in life. And in fact, the last hours of his life are going to be absolute torture. Terrible, terrible torture. And Jesus looks over at him and says, you've acknowledged me, and you've found paradise. Probably not in this life. Actually, definitely not in this life. Jesus probably could have looked at him and said, I guarantee you, in this life you will have suffering. You will have tribulation. These last few hours of your life are going to be absolutely terrible. But you have found paradise. Today you will be with me in paradise. Whoa. All of his striving, all of his trying, all of his efforts, everything, none of that mattered. Somehow it had brought him to this place of saying, man, I deserve to be on this cross. Man, I deserve what I'm getting right now. Jesus, remember me. Save me. Take me down from here, or take me up with you. And throughout our life, we're going to strive. Some of us have striven. Is it striven? Okay. We've striven. We've tried and tried and tried to obtain happiness, to find relief. And the only place that we can find it is in the arms of Christ. And many times, the only place we can find that is by being crucified next to him. Jesus said, you know, if anyone would save his life, he has to lose it. If anyone would... What does it profit you if you gain the whole world and yet you lose your soul? Solomon, as far as the standards of that day went, he had everything. He had it made. And yet at the end of it, he looked around and he said, this is all worthless. This is all useless. I've got to leave it all behind. I've had fun. Sure, I've enjoyed doing what I've done. But at the end of it all, it's nothing. It's pointless. And yet, when we come to Christ and we realize, only in you can I find paradise. Even if this life we've been stripped bare of everything we own, and yet, at the end, he guarantees us paradise. And here in church, it's a dim reflection. But here we have a community, we have a family, we have a place we've been accepted. He's brought us out of darkness into his marvelous light. Man. And all of that, apart from our striving, apart from our trying to get from here to there. And he comes along and says, here. Whoop. Paradise. Now, we still live in a fallen world. We still live in brokenness. But we are guaranteed paradise once we come to Christ. Wow. Very different from looking at the world under the sun. As looking at the world with the sun involved. With Jesus Christ involved. Man, that's a radically different picture. We're not striving to build paradise anymore. And now we're just welcomed in. Wow. Praise God. I'm going to let you go early today. That never happens. Let's stand together. God, I pray that you would just speak so clearly to our hearts, God, that only in you can we find fulfillment, only in you can we find any sense of meaning, God. In all the pleasures of the world, there is just emptiness at the end. And God, though we may work, though we may try and achieve, we may even get toys and enjoy life, God. But we have to recognize that only in you is there any true meaning, God. Only in you is there any finality, any wonder. Only through your Son can we actually find paradise. And God, I pray that you would help us to spread this good news. That through your Son, paradise is available, life is available, love is available. Jesus, change us from the inside out. Reorient our hearts, God. Help us to see through the lies of culture all around us that just says, if you buy this, if you do this, if you experience this, you'll find fulfillment, you'll find happiness. And while it may be brief, but only true and lasting happiness comes from you, God. God, I pray for those who are struggling today, who are trying to build their own paradise, God, that you would break the bondage that they find themselves in, Lord. And God, I pray that you would just bless the food downstairs, the fellowship that we're about to have, and bless us throughout this week, God. May we have ears that hear what you're trying to say to us and hearts that are willing to do what you tell us to do, God. God, help us as we're reaching out to our community around us, to the people around us, God, inviting them to you, inviting them to church, God, and that you would transform our community, God. God, I pray against all the darkness that reigns in this place, Lord, that your marvelous light would be breaking in. In your precious name.